I'd like to begin this morning with a video. I understand you're not unaccustomed to seeing videos, so I thought, and you got these great projection devices, so I thought, let's try this out today. So let's have the first video.
The truest nature of a human being is to be in peace, to seek contentment, to evolve, to gain knowledge. Every single human being on the face of this earth has the fundamental right to feel peace. And the source of peace is in you. It is time for the citizens of the world to open their eyes and become active participants in seeking peace. And what is that effort we have to make? We need to look at ourselves as the source of peace. If we take that approach, then peace will come. There is a place of peace within the heart of every single human being. Choose.
Peace, happiness, and joy are already within you. Just choose it. Oh, if it were just that simple. All of us would like to live in that peace of inner peace, wouldn't we? And wouldn't we want the world to be at peace, with enough for everyone to enjoy good quality of life, a peaceful world that I imagine would be one of flourishing biodiversity, where few species would be in danger of extinction. Because there would be enough for everyone. We wouldn't be worried about national borders, and people would be able to mix freely. There would be no need for the police or military, because people would have effective, non-violent ways to resolve their disagreements. There would be expansive appreciation for the different cultural heritages and religions, with the freedom to practice the ones or one that works best for our temperament. Advances in technology would be shared in such a way to permit all people to find meaningful employment that contributed to the well-being of humanity and satisfied our daily needs. You may call me a dreamer, but I'm not the only one, and I'll bet there are a few of you out there too. What gets in the way of creating such a world? The biggest barrier to outer peace in the world is in our own heads. The greed, hatred, and delusion that roils within us, much of it inherited from previous generations, that we carry around in our minds, much of it buried in our subconscious, interferes with our inner peace, which makes outer peace almost impossible. We live in a chronic deficit of inner peace. Awareness of this inner turmoil brings us, many of us, to religious organizations in search of inner peace. So today, I'd like to outline three classic ways people seek inner peace. You may already be traveling one of these paths to inner peace. Each offers wonderful potentials to find inner peace, yet each also has its dangers and limitations. The first and by far the most popular path is the devotional path. The devotee finds a person who may or may not be living right now to follow through their teaching, their presence, their blessing, or their realization, which transmits this inner peace and awakening to him or her. Realized beings are like magnets. In their presence, people can feel like peace is a blanket of warmth that surrounds them with love. I don't know how many of you have had this experience of being loved like this, but it is really, really wonderful. These teachers will gather large communities of people around them, which works to magnify their abilities. Many are familiar, of course, with ashrams of gurus in India, but evangelical Christian communities can operate as devotional centers to worship Jesus. Islam is built on the idea of the surrender to Allah. In Sufism, the goal is complete devotion to the beloved. The devotional path is often described as a path of the heart. It is a beautiful way to grow our capacity to love. But it has some potential problems too. The devotee is expected to surrender their will to the teacher and follow unconditionally. This self-abandonment can lead the devotee to the experience of self-transcendence of the ego with the teacher's expert guidance. It can also foster a vulnerable dependency that can be emotionally manipulated and abused. It is not uncommon for a guru to empty the bank accounts of the devotees and sleep with their spouses. Complete devotion can become idolatrous very easily, as this kind of power over another person can be very corrupting. But well done can be amazingly transformative. Another common spiritual path is the pursuit of truth and understanding. This is the path of wisdom. By careful study and analysis of sacred text, the subtle and hidden keys to understanding are revealed. This path to inner peace calms the troubled mind. This scholarly way will lead to cognitive enlightenment. The human mind is a beautiful organ like no other natural phenomenon. Our capacity for self-reflective thinking, to hypothesize, to synthesize, to generalize, and to realize is unparalleled and magnificent. Yet there are limits to what the rational mind can analyze and comprehend. For all their grandeur, our minds are still quite limited by the evolutionary processes that shaped them. Our cerebral cortex, where complex thought happens, remains a new innovation of Mother Nature. And there are many processes in the mind-body system that we don't fully understand, especially when it breaks down. The biggest problem with the mind is its evolutionary purpose. What it does best is look for threats. The mind goes into hyperdrive when it becomes afraid. It also ramps up its attention when it senses something that it wants. Our minds function magnificently to get what we want and to avoid what we don't want. What it often doesn't do as good a job of is helping us let go. Let go of its boundaries and be open to the forces and powers beyond what it understands and can control. An archetype of the path of the mind is the scholar surrounded by books and ancient manuscripts. An archetype of the path of the heart is the devotee at the foot of the master. Both thrive in a rarefied atmosphere away from the hustle and the bustle of daily life. They enjoy the inner journey of discovery away from the marketplace. These are not the typical folks that you'll find lobbying in Washington, D.C., or trading stocks and bonds on Wall Street, or rolling dice at the craps table in Las Vegas. The third path to inner peace is through helping others. It is the path of service. Rather than being removed from the world, the follower of this path is up to their knees in the mud with the troubles of the world in their arms. They are offering food to the hungry and shelter to the homeless. They are tending the wounded on the battlefield, putting their lives at risk. They are offering comfort to those in prison. Jesus had special praise for those who followed this path. These are the people we want to be around when we are in trouble, and they will be there for us. They are the backbone of any religious community. I'm sure you know who they are in this community. I know them in my congregation, and I love them to bits. So the devotee wants to love God. The scholar wants to know God. These folks want to serve God. That is their primary driver of their spiritual life. There is tremendous fulfillment and satisfaction making a difference in another person's life. And in truly serving the needs of others, the boundary of separation falls away and we discover the common life we share. There can be profound inner peace in the service of those in need. The trap, however, for the path of service is the very work itself. We want to make a difference in another person's life, and that doesn't always happen. This is especially true for those locked in the cycle of dependency or helplessness or bound by addiction. Serving others can be extremely frustrating if someone rejects or misuses our help or the advocacy that we do for them that doesn't come through. The wish to be successful can overcome the virtues of serving itself. As Jesus put it so well, the poor will always be with you. I love the vision of eradicating poverty and aspire to being part of a world that has no poverty. But the poverty of the mind and the heart is likely to continue. So we have three common paths people follow in their spiritual lives: the path of the heart, the path of the mind, and the path of service to find inner peace. People tend to focus on just one or two of these paths, often devaluing or ignoring the other paths. Another approach is to follow all three of them. That has been my way of seeking inner peace. I grew up within the Unitarian Universalist tradition in a small humanist fellowship in Newark, Delaware. My parents were scientific atheists who didn't believe in God. Neither did I. I loved everything that had to do with electronics, which led me to the study of electrical engineering and computer science. I was a practical guy that wanted to invent things and make a lot of money. Then at the age of 23, I had a heart-opening experience of spiritual love, playing, of all things, a game of chess that changed my life. I didn't want such an experience, didn't even have a hope of having such an experience. It just happened to me and initiated a change in the direction of my life that eventually led to the ministry. But the first result of having this experience was to begin my search for more of the deeply nourishing inner peace and love I experienced that day that I didn't even know I wanted, that I didn't even know existed. The first direction I turned toward was the path of the heart. I was attracted to psychic healing work. Through a reconnection with that initial experience in a healing circle, that led me to an American Sufi community in the San Francisco Bay Area. The experience of zikr, which is the primary spiritual practice of the Sufis, of chanting the name of Allah over and over again in the Northern Californian Mendocino Redwoods. Put your mind there, and it's hard not to fall in love. Blasted open my heart with love. What captured my attention next was Buddhist mindfulness or Vipassana meditation. At my very first class, when I was taught the Buddhist Four Noble Truths, I knew I was at home. Here was a path that sharpened my mind, led to deep insights into the nature of existence, and fed my heart through the practice of loving kindness or metta. But I hadn't left my Unitarian Universalist behind while I was dancing the dances of the universal peace with the Sufis and sitting motionless at Buddhist meditation retreats. I still felt the call to service. In fact, the more spiritual practice I did, the stronger that call became. I can still hear the intuitive voice that spoke to me when I walked away from that chess match back in February of 1980. This is not just for you. This is a gift you will share with others. My call to ministry was as clear as a bell then, even though it took me another 6 years to go to seminary. Before I finish, I'd like to bring on a second video of a wise teacher, Maya Angelou, to share a few words with us.
If I think of my life as a class and what I've really learned, I've learned a few things. First, I'm aware that I'm a child of God. It's such an amazing understanding to think that the it which made fleas and mountains and rivers and stars made me. What I pray for is humility, to know that there is something greater than I. Then I have to know that the brute, the bigot, and the batterer are all children of God, whether they know it or not. And I'm supposed to treat them accordingly. And it's hard, and I blow it all the time.
Mongrel class of people!
I'd like everybody to think of a statement by Terence. The statement is, I am a human being. Nothing human can be alien to me. If you can internalize the least portion of that, you will never be able to say of a criminal act, or I couldn't do that. No matter how heinous the crime, if a human being did it, you have to say, I have in me all the components that are in her or in him. I intend to use my energies constructively as opposed to destructively. If you can do that about the negative, just think what you can do about the positive. If a human being dreams a great dream, dares to love somebody, if a human being dares to be Martin King or Mahatma Gandhi or Mother Teresa or Malcolm X, if a human being dares to be bigger than the condition into which she or he was born, it means so can you. And so you can try to stretch yourself. So you can internalize, ah, homo sum humani nihila me alienum puto. I am a human being. Nothing human can be alien to me. That's one thing I'm learning.
It's a beautiful video. I found those on the Peace Channel. You can find that, a lot of great videos on the Peace Channel. Maya Angelou speaks so beautifully about stretching and taking risks. And I certainly have found that the path of service, especially in ministry, has stretched me again and again. I've served in the ordained ministry now for 25 years. And what I've found over those years is that by practicing the path of the heart together with the path of the mind and the path of service, that they balance each other. Practiced together, they can be correctives to the dangers of these paths. You might think of it as diversifying your spiritual portfolio. It's easy to get stuck and become unbalanced. I hear my capital T teacher speaking through every person I serve. My congregation constantly teaches me and shows me where I'm shielding my heart. Sitting in meditation early in the morning every day keeps my mind clear and my heart open, giving me the energy and guidance to serve my congregation and my community as well as I am able. The challenges that come up in service to others become fodder for my other practices. To serve the world effectively, we must be centered in our hearts and guided by our minds. The path of the mind and hearts is incomplete without service to humanity. In one way, if you are motivated and inspired today, is there's the North Star Peace Walk that's going to be in Washington Park, visiting a couple of the congregations and celebrating peace together. And I think one of their stops is going to be our congregation, so you get to see me again. When we practice together, the paths of the heart and mind and service will be able to realize inner and outer peace. and create heaven on earth, the realm of God, the beloved community that all the prophets, including Jesus, foretold, a house of prayer for all people. Let us be the ones who bring that vision to life. And we have a lovely affirmation of that here that we can read together to take with us. It's the action, not the fruit of the action, that's important. You have to do the right thing. It may not be in your power, may not be in your time, that there'll be any fruit. But that doesn't mean you stop doing the right thing. You may never know what results come from your action. But if you do nothing, there will be no result. And that is from Gandhi. I end there.